Welcome back to the Bright Lights of Broadway. This is The Cosmic Curtain, the official podcast of Cosmic Circus Broadway. I'm Brian Kitson, head writer at The Cosmic Circus. And joining me, as always, is my co-host and fellow boxy babe, RJ Miller-Zelenko. Are you ready, sir, to talk about Six?
I've got 6 whole minutes to talk about Six. Just kidding. I have 60 minutes. Talk about six.
You were so close. Why in Six they actually don't say 6 minutes, they say 5 more minutes.
They say 5, yeah.
Which is sad now that I think about that. But of course, so we're gonna be talking about Six the musical, which is currently running. This is the current show for Broadway in Detroit. It runs from now, which being January 9th, when we're recorded, all the way through the weekend. And I'm super excited to talk about this, but obviously if you have not seen Six, I'm sorry. We are going to spoil it. We're going to talk about everything. It's also history. These stories have been going on for hundreds of years. So we're not going to be too, it's not going to be too shocking. But anyways, by all means, please don't listen if you don't want to be spoiled. But if you are still here with us, let's get into it. So, RJ, I'm going to start you off. We're going to go back to history class. How familiar were you with the wives of Henry VIII prior to Six the Musical?
Not. I think totally in alignment with the whole premise of this musical, I remember that there were multiple wives.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all their story is.
That's it. Yep, that was all. But also, like, I would have learned about this probably when I was pretty young.
Okay.
And, like, who can remember that unless you're a history major? Like, I was a music major, so I took, like, one history class in college, and it wasn't even in, it was, like, ancient history. And it was, I went to religious school, so everything was done through a scope of Christianity.
Sure.
Which some of this would tie into that at some point, but it was like well before, we're talking like ancient times.
So you're not sitting down learning about the formation of the Church of England.
I mean, honestly, I probably like should have been. but my rebel self was like, I don't want to pay attention.
I mean, that's valid. I was going to say that I don't actually know if I ever learned about the six wives of Henry VIII, or like the Tudor family, or like branch of the monarchy. With the, like, if we're talking college, my only history class was I had the history of traffic in Africa, which was very specific. And I was like, this sounds like a class that I could probably ace. And so I took that class. It was really difficult because there's a lot to the changing of traffic, which is why there's a whole class about it. But if you were going back, you know, living in America, living in Michigan, as we both have grown up here, while there's sometimes a fascination with the world of the monarchy and like I, you know, I'm an Anglophile straight through. But there is not like a teaching of that. We learn about like American history. And like, I remember in fourth grade learning about Michigan history, but there's not always this like deep dive into like what's going on politically across the pond. So I feel like I miss out on like a huge chunk of like the history of the six wives of Henry VIII. I didn't even know about him until I went to the Tower of London in the UK. And I learned about Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard being beheaded, and we got to stand around the stone, and we all got to stare at it. That was about it.
Well, and that makes sense to me, though, too, right? Like, every country typically learns the most about their own country, and so even if we had vaguely brushed through this portion of history, like, you're gonna get maybe one paragraph in one chapter in 1 year.
Right.
When you're in like ninth grade, and then you never hear about it again. So thus is history, though, because there's a gazillion years to learn about. So
It's never ending. It's literally keeps going. No, I'm just kidding.
Like it's time.
I remember growing up, the other Bowling Girl. I remember that being a movie. I've never seen it, but I remember that people were crazy about that. And I think that's the first time I actually heard the name Bolin. So I think it's interesting that, like, obviously, again, that fascination with the royal family, the monarchy, but I think that it's shows like Six the Musical that are really, or shows like The Tudor, which I know was a big one, and there's a few other that like HBO and Stars and all of them have put out, but this is really kind of an interesting musical. Like when you think of the shows, it's like what draws you to telling the story of the six wives of Henry VIII, and for this show they do it kind of interestingly. So for the sake of time, I kind of want, can you tell us the show from your perspective, sir?
From my perspective,
yeah, like what is Six the Musical?
Six the Musical is, as we have been saying, literally about six wives of Henry VIII competing against each other in song format. Mm-hmm. In regards to telling us who had it the worst.
Sure.
Ultimately saying, you know, whoever had it the worst wins.
The competition.
Is the ultimate me, basically. Yes.
Yeah, they form a pop group, which is, like, so cool. Because you take this, like, very, when you think of the wives of Henry VIII, you think of, you know, big dresses. You think of. Not pop music. You're thinking of the traditional, like, green sleeves, which is how they kind of start the show. They start the show off with that traditional green sleeve song kind of playing. And then we just jump in, and it's a concert of these queens being a pop group, and they're fighting over who is going to be the lead. That's just such a... It gives that Hamilton vibe, you know, of, like, teaching history, but in a cool way, you know, in a hip way.
Yeah, in a, you know, new age, engaging comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That they knew people would pay attention to, right? Because it's so different. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I don't think there really is another musical right now that's equally in alignment with this one. Like, I think it's in a league of its own.
Because of the way...
Because it's just so, it's so specific. The only thing I can think of that might, in regards to, like, it being pop rockish, would be maybe, like, Moulin Rouge.
Sure.
Or, like, Anne Juliet. But those are literal stories, whereas this, like you said, like, basically we're watching six divas have a sing-off. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening.
And it's funny because I think that the way that they approach it with the sing-off, the competition, not only does it involve the audience, we're not actually voting, spoiler alert, anybody who hasn't seen it, we're not voting for who wins because there's a wrap-up, but they do invite us into the show, but they do it in a way of being like we can all laugh at the fact that, like, men suck, you know, and, like, relationships suck and people are horrible and we've all had it bad and we've all kind of been there. And so it does make this, like, very topical commentary to an old conversation that has spanned hundreds of years. And so that's what kind of makes it so interesting, at least in my opinion. Like, it's interesting because it's something universal that we don't think people necessarily maybe were dealing with back then. But here they are. These six women were dealing with a horrible man who mistreated them and had power and let it go to his head, you know?
Yeah, and I mean... Yeah, there's no vote, but for sure, like, the fourth wall is dissipated for the show, right? Like, there is a direct communication happening between the people on stage and the audience. And that can get tricky with shows because you run the risk of having audiences who don't know when to stop and or not participate at all. And... as someone who's been on stage before, not even in a high amp show like this one, I can only imagine if you have an audience that's, like, not into it, it's going to be the worst hour and a half ever. Like, it's just gonna be brutal. So it is, it's one of those shows where, like, you have to be into it. You can't be afraid to participate, respectfully, right? Like, when they prompt you to clap or yell or interact or even dance, you do it. And then you kind of get the cue when to chill out.
You know, on that front, there was actually some instances in, like, the song Six, and then even farther, like, the Mega Six, where you could tell, like, granted, I've seen this twice in New York, you've seen it once, I'm sure you worked it multiple times over in Grand Rapids, I've seen it a few times, this was my fifth time seeing the show, one of my favorites, but I noticed that this time, while there was also a full audience, like, I don't think there was, a single seat besides the two besides us that were empty. People almost didn't know when to stop clapping in Six. Like, there's clearly, a beat that they start you up with, but then there's, a moment, there's a clear moment when it stops. And there was, that moment of, nobody, those of us who had seen it knew, you stopped clapping, and then there was those people who were are we still clapping? Are we, not clapping? And then introducing into the Mega Six, people sat down, and I think it was Catherine of Aragon was just like, no, Detroit, keep standing, we have, don't sit down yet. So that was interesting. You're right, that there was this little, there was a difference there. That this is clearly, it's a big show, but there's some people that didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to happen. I think that is one of the biggest differentials, though, between when you talk about Nashville tours and you talk about Broadway. Like, people going to Broadway to see this, they know. It has its cult-like following, sure. Right? They know the jokes. They know when to laugh. They know when to sit. They know when to stand. They know when to interact. This show goes by so quickly that truly, I don't think the audience, they haven't seen it before, they don't quite get it until a good 45 minutes in. Because it's so rare. Like, nowadays we do have these mega remixes at the end.
Sure.
Right? Like, almost every show now has some type of post-curtain song that is engaging.
Yes.
It's I don't think I recall another show right now that from the moment that the curtain comes down, you start engaging with the stage. So it almost just like a shell shock to people who haven't seen it before, because they're like, wait, you want us to, it's the opening number, you want us to yell and scream at you? And you could tell that there are people who are just very uncomfortable
for sure.
But
you know, when we went to New York last time, we did see the show. I bought the tickets. I was like, you have to see the New York Queens. And there was definitely even a difference between Broadway shows between seeing Sweeney Todd and seeing Six. Like, there was a different, again, that interaction, that callback, that energy, you kind of know what to do. And like you said, like, they're walking on that opening number after they announce, you know, Divorce, Beheaded, Died. They're talking to the audience, you know, New York, we are live, or like Detroit, we are live. Which gives it that concert feel, like, right off the bat. Like, they're like, you know, like, this is a concert. At concerts, you can sing with us, you can jump with us, you can dance with us. You're supposed to get into it a little bit more, even though there is still a little bit of that removal from it. Like, we are still at a show, and you don't see people quite, like, there wasn't people singing, per se, unless it was me. But there is that little bit of that removal still, but they do welcome you right away. And it kind of reminded me of the Moulin Rouge when, like, again, Harold Zeidler comes out and he's just like, welcome to the Moulin Rouge, you're here kind of thing. Like, let's get into it. You're right there with them in that show.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little, I mean, like you said, literally, I think before they even sing a word, typically, there's already, you know, when we see the shadows and the spotlights and each queen walks out, there's typically cheers for every single queen or collective, right? And it was a little bit shaky. And of course, it was opening night. But it was a little bit like, what are we supposed to be doing? Why are these people next to me yelling?
Yeah.
You know, it because they have zero idea and zero concept of, yeah, it is, they literally say, you know, this is a contest. We are in concert. And that is the behavior that we expect from you as an audience.
You know, I think that this time I was even hesitant. For some reason, there just felt like there was a different energy. And it wasn't until Marty, who went with us, sat right between us. And all of a sudden, she, like, first queen she saw, she, like, did a little whoop. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is where we're at. And like you, because there almost was, like, a question of, like, are we doing this here? Like, this is, this, like, we're here for a show. Are we, do like, are we doing this? Again, with the touring show, does it have that same energy that you have in New York? And this one definitely does.
Well, and it's all about the first person, yeah. Right? Like, the brave soul that... initiates that breaking of that wall, because nobody wants to be that guy or that person until they just are brave enough to be that person.
Sure.
Like I, as we know, I internalize everything, so you will almost never hear me boot and holler or scream. And even if I absolutely love what's happening, it's just like not who I am as a human being. I will clap. I will clap very loudly and enthusiastically, but that's just not me. So, like, if it was me versus the rest of the theater, like, I will not be the one to start.
For
it.
Sure.
So I do appreciate, but I enjoy hearing other people get into it and be, because I know, once again, I know what it feels like on the flip side when people are engaged with you on stage. Whether it's a laugh or just, you know, applause or cheers, like that just makes the performance. I think any performer will tell you, we will do 10 times better if you do this thing for us. And I think that even did play into the show as well. As it went on, it got better.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you said that. And that's something that I want to touch on a little bit later. But I do want to say there was one moment where for those, you know, who haven't been to a show with RJ, is that he has a very polite, like, golf clap for most numbers. But I think it was when, Kelly Denise Taylor was singing Jane Seymour's Heart of Stone at the end. I actually, like, saw your hands moving in the corner of my eye, like, very, like you were like, I was like, oh, he's actually, like, that song hit him really hard.
Well, I mean, that song always... I also feel the need when I feel like an audience, as if I need to, like, take off for the whole audience. But, like, once again, it's one of those things where when you see a show, you know also when an elongated applause is kind of not supposed to happen. But if someone does a really good job, like, it does happen. And because, once again, we were only, like, three songs in, I felt like the audience was still not quite... We hadn't landed yet.
Yes.
And so I was being particularly enthusiastic because I was like, no, like, we need to show more appreciation.
For sure.
And so my way of trying to prompt that is apparently clapping louder and harder and more intensely.
I mean, I was too busy sobbing at first and clearing my eyes out to have my hands clapping, but I was getting there. But I agree with you that there was a definite, like, the... I didn't notice it until we got to Catherine Howard, Elise Cruz, and at the end of All You Want to Do, there was the first moment of, like, the extra long clapping, which, again, that song is very emotional. It's not as slow as Heart of Stone, but it does have the same, like, emotional depth of Stone, Heart of Stone. And that was the one that I started to notice that I was like, oh, people, you're getting into it. And I was like, we're almost done now. We're like, oh, the show's almost over. And you're just not realizing, like, oh, yeah. This person deserves their due.
Well, and, like, once again, when we talk about the difference of the way that the show is created, when you think about a stereotypical musical, you're thinking, okay, it's about 2.5 hours, it's in two acts, the first act is usually just over an hour. Like, this show is only really, it's one act, and it's basically the length of one act. And so by the time most folks have gotten into a regular show, it's an hour and a half in. And so with this show, it's what, 80 minutes, 85 minutes? And so by the time people are amped up, it's time to leave.
For sure.
So this show, you do, you, like, you as an audience member almost have to emotionally prepare yourself to be energetic from the opening second, rather than sitting back and just kind of watching what's happening.
Absolutely.
Which usually, as we know, first acts technically tend to be slower, and then second acts tend to be quicker and more progressive. Right. So,
I mean, this show really is, like, at our show start, was supposed to start at 7:30. At 7:30, they announced we have 6 minutes, and we were done by 9. Like, it was like an hour and a half out the door. We were done. And you really do, you move quick. Do you think that this makes musicals more accessible to people if they're not as long and drawn out?
Yes. I've heard feedback for both ways. So, you know, there are people with, like, shorter attention spans who literally just can't sit that long,
sure,
right? And when we talk about accessibility, you know, it's just easier because it's shorter. You're in, you're out. And then I hear folks who are like, oh, that was it?
Sure.
Like, that the expectation is, you know, another whole hour or so. Specifically, and the only time I really hear that gripe is around the price tag.
Sure.
Because the thought process is, well, I'm paying the same amount of money I would for something like, I don't know, Wicked or Les Mis, but I'm only getting half the amount of show. So they're thinking more quantity versus quality.
Sure.
Which I can understand from that specific standpoint, but as we all know, you still have to pay. I mean, it doesn't matter how long the show is, you still have to pay everybody involved. You still have a set, you still have costumes, you still have all of the things that go into putting a production together. So
right,
I think it could go both ways. But it is, especially on like a weeknight, it's kind of nice to get out by 9 o'clock, and not be, you know, getting home at midnight from a show.
Well, that's also because most people don't stand outside and talk like we do. So that's on us.
Well, but even like, for example, for some shows, I mean, Detroit, I love the time start for them.
For sure.
Grand Rapids starts at 8.
Yes.
And I know a lot of theaters that start at 8. And it is late. I mean, you think about 8 o'clock start time. If you start on time, you got a 2.5 hour show plus a 10-15 minute intermission. It's basically 10:45. And then you have to sit in a parking structure for another 30 minutes. So yeah, it is just, it can be brutal, especially for people who travel to see shows because it's a specific show.
You know, that's very valid. You know, like when we go to New York, it is still exhausting when the show starts at 8 and we're like, we just got off you know, we flew in the morning, we're going to a show at 8 at night, and you're there until 11:30. It is absolutely brutal. Sometimes you're trying to fight, like, keeping your eyes open, keeping yourself engaged in the way that you want to engage with the program, and also that the program deserves to be engaged with. It's brutal.
Which, I mean, also to the actor's credit, to be that high energy at 8 p.m., like, most times on an average day, like, I'm at home at 8 p.m. You know, like, I'm chilling in my PJs, doing work or whatever, you know, but being relaxing.
Sure.
I'm not doing a 90-minute high-intensive workout vocally and physically.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think this ties into it as well. What was it like starting Sweeney Todd at 8 o'clock at night? Because some of those shows, you were doing a 3-hour show starting at 8, like after working all day, like a Friday show, you're at 8 o'clock and you've worked all day, you're going in, like that has to be absolutely exhausting by the time you're done.
Yeah, it is. Especially because call time is usually substantially earlier than that. So you're actually at the theater for a good like 5 to 6 hours a night.
Jeez.
Broadway's a little different because they do their own makeup, they have wigs, you know, like, and they're professionals. So they're just like doing stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe coming in to the house an hour before the show starts at the earliest. But even that, I mean, you have an hour prep, and then you have a stage door, and you have, and that's after you've already taken all your makeup, all your costumes, put that all away, gotten it ready for the next day. So yeah, it's I don't know how. I mean, obviously, once again, they're professionals. It's what they do. It's their living. But you have to be thoroughly exhausted and just go home.
Sure.
Or in this case, go to a hotel or Airbnb or wherever they're staying and craft, because they probably aren't getting into a bed till midnight.
Sure.
And that's probably early.
And people don't understand, too. It's like not always like they are, like they have nothing to do till the show. Like when I interview them, sometimes it's 9, 10 o'clock in the morning after having done a show the night before. And they're up and they're dressed and they're ready and they're doing press and they're for the next city that they're going to visit. And like it's that part is kind of excruciating as well, I would assume. Like you're doing what you love. And I feel like that's what I always take away from these individuals I get to talk to, is that they love what they're doing. For some of these are their dream jobs. But that doesn't make it any less exhausting. So like, yeah, getting home, I'm not gonna lie, getting home at 9:30 from the show, it was great. I was like, what do I do with this time? Like I can sit and like watch a television show. I don't have to like go to bed right away for work the next day. And I do wonder for other people as well. Like I think of people like my mom, who she could not wait to support you and Sweeney Todd, but her hip was killing her at, you know, intermission time, and she had another half of a show to go. When we went to go see Six last year, she didn't have a problem with her hip, because it was like you're sitting down. By the time your hip starts to bother you, you're actually standing up for the last song and we're out, you know? So that's kind of nice, too. You had mentioned that this show was a comedy, which obviously it is, and we're going to talk about the comedy a little bit later. But how exactly would you classify this musical? Because I had someone, what do they call it the other day to me? A park and bark? They're like, it's just a park and bark. They just like stand there and they're singing, which to me means like concert-esque. You know, it's kind of, it is a concert, but how would you classify Six?
It's a musical comedy. And it is a concert.
Okay.
It's concert style. It's made intentionally that way. Even the set is made that way.
Right.
Right. Like nothing is moving, because in my mind, the more simple the stage, the more intense typically the acting or the vocals.
Sure.
And that I think is very true for the show. A little bit of background around these queens and the way that it's written, each queen is based off of a different vocal theme.
Yep.
And so the high intense vocal workout of each of these songs, and then the backing vocals to support each other, because there are literally only 6 people on stage, means you're singing every song every time. And they're all powerhouse songs, whether it's a power ballad or just straight up a bring the house down kind of song. It concert, yes, but I don't say that in a negative way.
Okay.
Because it is what it is.
I've gone to some shows, specifically like local ones, and like the concerts are kind of, they are park and barks, as they were calling, which I thought was hilarious to hear. I've never heard it called that before. But like, you literally stand there and you just kind of sing the song. But like for six, they are dancing. There's huge choreography. There is comedy because there is scenes in between. Like it's not just like a, it's not like just what you would think a comedy, like a concert is. Like there's scenes in between some of these characters. There's scenes where they're interacting with the audience, and there's intense dancing. Like, and when you mentioned this inspiration, like when you say divas, that's right. Like, I mean, some of them are very noticeable. Like Catherine Howard has the pony just like Ariana Grande, and her song hits notes like Ariana Grande does. And like, this is an intense workout. They are sweating their butts off on stage. So to me, when I thought of concert, I thought like it's concert-esque, but it feels like it's more. It feels like it's concert plus, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's entertainment. Like, it's not a concert in an old-fashioned type of concert. Like, we're not sitting through a symphony orchestra, right? We're sitting through an Ariana Grande concert. We're sitting through
Beyonce.
An Adele or Beyonce concert. You have the choreography that is intense enough to be entertaining and to make them sweat, but at the same time not distract from the intricacies of the vocals and how complicated and crazy vocally that they are.
Absolutely.
Which is why, I mean, arguably, I mean, this is why we see performers lip sync frequently, because they can't do both at the same time.
Yeah.
And so this is bringing both of those things, essentially, together.
Absolutely. I didn't think about that. But, like, there's been plenty of times that we've seen artists lip sync when they're doing this intense things, and there's no lip syncing on the stage, you know? With the show, we had kind of talked about it. Like you said, like the show got better as it went on. But overall, do you feel like the show was funnier? Like, I feel like there was the same jokes, but like the way that some of these queens delivered them, some of their like the voices that they used, like the way that they would like stop at certain ways, there was a lot of like little tweaks and changes, which I guess I love that they can do that, because there's always going to be changes with six different people on stage. But to me, I felt like some of the jokes were hitting a lot funnier than I remember them hitting last time. They were still funny last time. Do you feel like there was a change in the comedy of the show?
Yeah. I saw it last year, or whenever it was here. I don't know if I've been so focused on vocals that I completely forgot the jokes. I knew that there were some, but like they truly did just hit harder. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that, again, speaks to the newness of the audience. Mm-hmm. So while you might, the new audiences might not know when to clap or when to engage, they also have never heard these jokes before. And so they're new and just hilarious, because, like, you never would have thought to hear that joke. That's mixing this old-timey Shakespearean joking with modern day. So yeah, I do think, and of course the chemistry of the queens and each of them still having a very distinct personality in the way that they approach the jokes, it was different. There were some substantial changes in how some of them, I think, were said, that I enjoyed.
I listened to both the original soundtrack and also the opening night of New York soundtrack. So sometimes, like, the one for New York has some of the jokes in there, like, especially leading up to the songs. And one of the ones that I never skip, because I think is hilarious, is the opening of No Way by Catherine of Aragon. And again, she's got this very, like, brisk way she talks, and it's, like, very sassy. And I noticed that this one, she was still sassy, but it was, like, very, like, fed up. And so, like, when she would deliver the jokes, it was like an exasperated, like, wife of being, like, my husband's, like, a piece of shit, you know, kind of thing. And I was just, like, oh, like, that made Catherine different. Even though it's, again, the same jokes. Like, when she says about the wimple, I don't think I look that good in a wimple. She's, like, not doing it out of anger. She's doing it out of, like, annoyance and being fed up and just being, like, tired of his shenanigans already. And I thought, oh, like that, again, that's just one example. But like, I feel like every queen approached their every actress approached their queen in just a slightly different way that just, I don't know, it changed the entire show for me a little bit. I still loved it. It was, and it wasn't like a bad change. It was just like, it was a change. It was a different show, even though it was the same show.
Yeah, and that is, I think, the reason that the show remains very popular is it truly allows, I think, some liberties to happen with the personalities. Like, we, once again, yes, the characters have particular stereotypes in which they're kind of following, but the exact way, because the pace of the show is so, so fast, but then when we do get those lines and we get these scenes and we get the comedic relief almost, it's just so specific and succinct that the delivery, it really just, it breaks up the show. But once again, depends on the six people that you have on stage, because if you are watching them interact with each other, even when they aren't verbally saying anything, that plays a lot into it too. And there was quite a bit of physical comedy happening alongside the verbal.
Yes, I don't remember that. Like, I remember some of it, but I don't remember it to the extreme. And I thought, oh, this, again, it changes that show. And you almost could tell that they had a really good chemistry together. And not that the other one didn't, but the last time we saw it in Detroit, I'm pretty sure we had two or three understudies, one of which is now a main queen. But I remember us texting about it after, because you had seen it a different night than I did. And you were like, yeah, there was some, like, there was some definitely differences between, like, you could tell that some of them were understudies. Not that that was bad. There was just, like, there wasn't, you, they weren't feeding off each other the same way that you would see, you saw with these ones who apparently have been together for a little bit of time now.
Right, right. And that's, yeah, that's normal for any show, right? And if you don't get that stage time with particular individuals, you're still trying to figure out, you know, you're still worried about singing and choreography and the fact that you have only practiced it maybe once with these people. So, yeah. And then when you have your standard cast, then it's way, you know, just down to the minuscule pieces that aren't even choreographed or written. Like, I think of the scene where they're all kind of bickering with each other. Like, even though it's for sure not choreo, like, everything that they say is not written, what tends to happen is you tend to say the same thing once you've found your groove within that group, right? So then when you pull someone out of that, or one or two or three, you have to refigure out what that feels like across the entire span, not just at that moment, but across the entire span of the show.
Which makes sense, because again, you're changing those dynamics, and you have not just the six queens up on stage, but you also have the band, who are all characters as well, and they're all interacting, and they interacted a lot more this time too. Like, before, I always felt they were there, but they were slightly removed. You occasionally have some form of interaction. You always, like, thank them at the end, like, as the part of the mega mix, you know, but there was times where the queens would be, like, turning around and bringing them into the fight, and, like, bringing them into the argument. I thought, I was like, oh, you're approaching it differently. But, like, again, if you didn't have that with everybody, it would make sense that it would change. Like, if you threw in one new person, that whole dynamic could be thrown off. Of the changes, though, too, while I thought this was more funny, did you notice that there was also changes to both the costume and set design, too?
You know, I was trying to remember, because there were some things I was like, am I just remembering it differently, or is it truly different?
So one of the things that stuck out to me right away was Anne Boleyn's sleeves, which were just like, I think all of the costumes had the colors turned up a little bit, like even more so. They already were vibrant, but like, I went and was looking at pictures when I got home, because I was like, I don't think Anne's sleeves were so green. And when you look at the pictures, even from like a year or two ago, they're not. They're like almost like a, they're like a greeny black meshy kind of thing. And these were like bejeweled green sleeves that were very vibrant. You could not miss them. And there was just certain things like that. There wasn't like huge changes, but I noticed those little pieces. I was like, oh, you're fine tuning the costumes still. Like, you're still trying to find their voice, or like maybe again, it's this tour has a different, slightly different costume than maybe some past tours. But those are the things that I kind of noticed, along with the stage too. There was like that gold ribbon thing up top, which I was pretty sure was not part of the last show. And with the changing of the confetti, I do think that maybe they added that to hide. That's where the confetti was at.
I didn't even notice that.
There was like, it was kind of like a, I don't know, kind of like a, what do they call it? A portcullis or something for, or like the top of like a castle, but it was like, it was gold and it wasn't metal. And usually the stages are all very metal with lights.
Yeah.
So I do think it's interesting, but with the confetti, I got to ask you, what did you think of them having the confetti on the stage and not on the people?
Well, as a former usher, I would say, God bless you. confetti is the front of house staff and manager's absolute worst nightmare.
Understandable.
Especially the amount that shows usually use, including this one. I mean, once they turned it on,
it didn't stop.
It just kept coming. Like, you were, I mean, it reminds me of like the end of the Adele's residency show, where she disappears in the confetti downpour. Like, that's what it feels like. It just like it kept, and I don't know if that's for effect, because I feel like you can still do the same thing with a little bit less. Like, confetti is confetti,
right?
But they had it pouring for that entire. It was a five
easily.
Minutes. Five solid minutes of confetti.
Easily. Which cannot be easy to dance on either.
Well, and I'm sure it's made of something specific so that it's not as slick. Mm-hmm. But, man, yeah, it's... I just saw Anne Juliet, and I forgot about the amount of confetti they used.
Yes.
At mid-show, and so they have to go through and sweep it all up. And that is a task. Like, it is, it's a lot.
Do they use it mid-show for Anne Juliet? I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, I can't remember what song it is now, but right before intermission, one finale.
Oh, It's My Life.
Yeah, because I was wondering what was happening, because they bring the curtain, or not the curtain, they go off stage. And there was a stagehand that had to bring on a like V-shaped Swiffer type thing,
sure,
to clear the stage. And I was like,
interesting.
All right. I mean, I just hadn't paid attention to that before, but makes sense.
It definitely does make sense. So yeah, I did notice that. I did notice the confetti changing. And obviously, though, before we go, we have to talk about the music. So is there, you know, I think that we mentioned the last time we went, it might have been, it was New York. We talked about how, I think you said specifically, every time you go there, you're drawn to a new queen. Or there's like something, there's like a different song that you feel like pulled to. What song was it this time and why?
Song-wise, it's always the same, but I think Queen-wise, like, delivery-wise, which is shocking, because this is actually probably one of my least favorite songs, but it is,
Queen of the Castle.
What is the title? Sorry Not Sorry?
Oh, Don't Lose Your Head.
Don't Lose Your Head.
Avril Lavigne.
She just vocally was probably one of the strongest ones on stage. And it's so nitpicky. But her runs and her riffs were so clean and tight comparatively to everyone else. And she did, she added a couple, and she did all the original ones. And I noticed with this tour, there were a lot of liberties taken with each song. And some of them felt looser, like substantially, how do I say this kindly? Just maybe less intensive or a little bit more glidey than previous shows that I've seen.
I know one of the ones you're talking about. I'm gonna say real quick because it caught my attention too. First off, we do want to give shout out to Gabby Albo, who played Anne Boleyn. I will agree with you. I liked her over the one we saw last time in Detroit. With Anne Boleyn, I think that what's interesting is that they tend to have people who are like can border on like this like almost like screechy or whiny tone, and so I was like kind of preparing because I was like, okay, we're gonna there's a chance, and it wasn't. It was like the same tone that I expected, but not delivered in the same way. Like it was like she wasn't whining. She was just kind of like laughing through it all.
Yeah, well, and it was, and I don't know the background of each of these folks. I should have done my homework, but I did not. But even her accent, like natural, like her voicing naturally, I think was deeper than many of the Anns that I've heard previously. And so, yeah, when you talk about that whiny, kind of high-pitched song, it felt more guttural. It felt deeper and more, I don't know, put together. Her natural tone is darker, and so I think it made the whole song just feel way more like rock belty than like a whiny type situation.
Would you be surprised to learn that she was the understudy for Jasmine on Aladdin? Because that, as soon as I saw, looked that up, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like there was a deeper richness to her. But one of the ones which I'm gonna say, of like the moments that they changed it a little bit, and I know that she can hit the note because she hit it last time and she went higher. But in Jane Seymour's, like, there's that moment where, like, right before she hits the high note, she, like, stops. And she didn't go for the high note. She, like, went for a note lower, but then she, like, ran down and ran back up higher. And I was like, that was interesting. That was a choice because, like, that moment's, like, supposed to hit you like that Adele, like that Celine Dion moment, like, supposed to, like, punch you in the gut. And when you started off lower, it wasn't, like, the sucker punch that I was used to. Because I was ready to, like, you're going to sob, Brian. And yes, I still cried, but, like, I didn't. There was that choice to go a little bit lower. And again, that could be to save voices. That could be to, like, you really want to hit the higher note and go higher. But there was a change there. And that was what I would assume was, like, a very obvious change. It wasn't like that night you didn't hit the note. It was like you didn't even try to hit that note.
Yeah, I noticed that one. And from what I understand of, you know, I've never been on a Broadway tour, obviously.
Not yet.
But my understanding is every riff and every change to the original score goes through the music director, and it has to be approved. Uh-huh. And stuff. Even these tiny little choices, as we're calling them, have to be approved by the production. And so the liberties that every single note liberty that's taken is approved. Uh-huh. And of course, I think of the Wicked movie,
sure.
Right? And all of the changes that we've heard from that, where it's still kind of staying true to the original score, but they're making it their own. So I was glad that even though she did the, you know, originally it was the opt down and then she did the run back up. For me, vocally, that feels substantially safer than doing the pop up and having like your voice crack. Or something of that nature, because yeah, like you said, like she still hit the note, it's just vocally, it is way easier to start low and run all the way up the ladder than it is to just pop to the top.
Right.
Especially because that note's held for so long, too. Like, you have to hit it and you have to hold it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the ornamentation, if you want to use all these.
Please.
Music. Music-y words.
You should agree.
It was different for almost every single song.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's just like, once again, when we talk about personality and we talk about the style of each character and how that person is embodying the character, then it makes sense for that. But it is interesting to see it. They were probably the furthest from the original that I've
heard. I was going to say, I think last time they came to Detroit, it felt like they were trying to hit the originals very, like, or even, like, surpass it. I remember Catherine of Aragon, there was a note that the last one hit, Rosie Perez, I might be wrong, that might be the wrong person, but she hit it, and it was high, it was so high, but it, and I was like, damn, girl, that's great. And there was a few times where this Catherine, Chani Mozanat, if I butcher that, I am so sorry, but she did hit the lower notes and she had the deeper range. I was like, ooh, that like, it like gave me chills for a different reason. And there was a lot of those like changes of just being like, you're not trying to copy the same exact show, which I love the show. I would see the original show 20 times over, but it did give this such a unique experience that I was like, ooh, I want to like, I need to see this again. I think he even walked out and said, I need to see this one again. Cause they were such different queens.
Yeah, yeah. My typical favorite song. I'm just forgetting all of the titles. The not the mix, but the closing queen.
Oh, Catherine Parr.
Yeah, Parr. I was a little.
She was the most different.
Yes. Acting-wise.
Yes.
So, like, through the whole show, I was kind of, like, wondering where she was going, because acting just felt, the character felt different to me. And so, but then when she opened her mouth for her song, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why she was, because at first I was like, she, it almost didn't even seem like she fit in that specific character for me. But then she literally opened her mouth to sing her solo, and I was like, I completely understand now why they cast her in this role. Because in my opinion, that's one of the hardest songs. So,
is it because they're so, you have to have such a vocal range for that one?
Yeah, and it's like, it just jump, it's in, which all of them are so difficult, but it goes, that top thinny type situation, you're basically going from a soft ballad to a hip-hoppy, like the genre almost changes halfway through the song, and so the placement for me, at least, is in two different places. Like, she has to be in head voice for kind of the beginning, or maybe a mix, and then really get into the like kind of belty power house towards the end. And then, of course, as we know, it goes right into the final few songs, where she is kind of leading the entire group. And gets a lot of those riff ornamentation solos, and kind of almost scat like stuff happening, which also is very, that's something I could never do. So I always appreciate.
As she was kind of wrapping up her part of that song, the couple in front of us, the guy was like, like, he turned to his girlfriend, and I'm paraphrasing here, but something on the lines of, like, she had one of the hardest key changes I've ever seen, basically. And I to me, that doesn't mean anything, but I'm sure to you that means something.
Yeah. And maybe that is, I haven't actually even ever looked at any of the sheet music of the show, but if I did see it, I'm sure. And maybe that is one of the things is it's just, it is truly, it bounces. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the other songs kind of, they had a hill to climb and then they got there and then they came down. Hers kind of is just going, we're going from 1 to 7 to 5 to 6 to 1 to 3. Like, there's just a sure. lot. So, yeah. But also, I'm just probably biased to that song, so it's fine.
You know, I think that what's interesting is that I appreciate every song, but when I listen on, when I listen to the album, I always skip Heart of Stone because it's not one of my favorites to listen to. I like to see that one performed. I don't know if that makes any sense. I was actually, for some reason, really into, which is my second least favorite song on the album, Queen of the Castle. But that's not the name of the song. I'm also forgetting the names of the song here. But I don't know if it's just this actress. I loved her energy. Danielle Mendoza just, she brought such a, like it was like the same energy, but softer. Because again, that's another role that is like very like the party girl. She's the party girl of all of them. You know, she's having fun. She's doing her thing. So I liked that. And I'm usually a big fan of Catherine Howard's song, too. And there was a few times where I had a little more trouble connecting with this one. And again, I think it's because there was a lot of op-downs, which is not a problem. But I think that my favorite was also Anne Boleyn, Still Lose Your Head. I think that there was just something. I think it was that I was so shocked by like how different it was from the last time. And I didn't like the last tour that we saw. And like her energy and her vocals it was like that punch. It was like, it's what I wanted from that role. So I think that is the one I also enjoyed a lot. But I love all my queens. You know that. There's not a queen that I don't love.
I mean, yeah, it's such a good show. I agree that, Castle.
And of Cleves.
Just, it was different. It was just.
Get down.
And once again, like, we talk about casting, and honestly, like, this whole cast for me felt different than, yeah, like, the last cast I saw felt kind of cookie cutter in regards to what the original cast mm-hmm. was. And that normally happens, right? Like, they usually go for a certain look, they go for a certain vibe, mm-hmm. The same type of vocals, and this just felt like they truly were like, okay, we're putting all of that aside. Can you sing these songs well? Yeah. And then they cast it like that. And so the attitudes and stuff just felt just a little bit different, mm-hmm. a little bit mm-hmm. new. But also I think that that's what's going to help the show stay relevant, stay popular, is that, you know, especially obviously if there's an actress that you just follow or that you like. This seems like one of those, like, once again, kind of cult like mm-hmm. following shows where, I mean, I think the current Broadway, they've been on Broadway now for what, a year, 2 years?
Yes.
And most of them started on the tour, I think. If I remember right, they were the first tour I saw years ago.
Yes.
So
the tour that you told me the one that was in Grand Rapids, and we had a different one in Detroit.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So a couple years back.
But, you know, what was interesting, too, I like how you said that. Like, they feel like they casted them differently. And, like, can you sing the roles? Because even, again, when you go back to, like, the costumes, where I've watched tons of videos of the from around the world, and it's a lot of like, okay, this character's hair has to be pinned this way and done this way. And then I noticed that, like, you know, Anne of Cleves had that long ponytail, and I was like, the long braid, I was like, oh, that's cool. Catherine Parr's wasn't all pinned up, it was curly, but it was down and it was around. And I was like, oh, you're letting them, can you play this role, make it your own? And I think that's what's going to help the show kind of not kind of stagnate? Because I've been watching some of these shows, and it feels like even Hamilton, which was big, feels like it's stagnating in like ticket sales and stuff, because it's the exact same show every single time, because it's down to an art. Like, it's down to like a, this person hits this spot, you do this thing, you say this line. And now Six, they're kind of like, okay, spread your wings a little bit. Let's play around with the role.
Yeah, I think, once again, it's such a small, tight cast. And yeah, some shows have such a specific branding that they do cast the same look, the same. But this show specifically feels so new that the diversity piece is different than stereotypical Broadway. And I think that's also what draws people to go see it, is that they can go to a show where they feel like they can see themselves represented, mm-hmm. On every level, right? If we're talking race, ethnicity,
size.
Like, yeah, it doesn't discriminate, where I think old school Broadway might have, because for, as it should be, it's about your talent. And it's not about what you look like, or, you know, what accent you have, or anything like that. And that's encouraging to, of course, the audiences who are just now, I feel like this generation, like, I didn't grow up seeing anyone probably over a size like 4 on a Broadway stage, right? Now we're seeing folks, we're being way more body inclusive. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting for a lot of people.
For sure. I mean, granted, it wasn't exactly, it was like Broadway adjacent, but I remember some people got like into an uproar about Renee Rapp as, oh my God, what's her name? We just saw that musical. Why am I blanking? Regina George. Yeah.
And Girls.
Yeah. And like, because she had curves, and I'm just like, yeah, well, that's okay. And like, a lot of people came to the defense, and like a lot of the younger generation was like, let's be more inclusive. People aren't size 4s, you know, like, and so it's cool that you get to see a little more representation on the stage. And so I do love that about Six. Of course, our last question, sir, would you go see this again?
Of course, I'll always see. This is probably a show that I will continue to go see. And maybe, again, when we talk about accessibility, we talk about time, maybe it's because the time, I don't feel like I need to give up 4 hours of my life every time that I go mm-hmm. see it. Not that I wouldn't if it was, but it's just, it's enjoyable. It's fun. And it's light, and we have so many shows and a world that is so, can be so kind of dreary and dark sometimes, that it's nice to just, it addresses some dark things mm-hmm. in a positive and uplifting
sure.
way.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
All that to say, it's a hard yes.
Man. It will always be a hard yes for me. First off, I like how you were like, I don't have to give up 4 hours of my life. Not like we're going to New York to see 7 shows in just under a week.
Okay, but that, I mean, it's fine.
But no, I get what you're saying too. Like, it, I do like the time commitment. I do like that it's enjoyable. You're not torturing yourself with 3 hours of like dreariness. And we won't get into what shows that are. We all know what it is. But this is just a very, it's an empowerful, I think that's what, it's empowering to anybody who sees it, be it if you're a young girl who is seeing yourself on stage for the first time, if you are a gay man who is just seeing somebody speak up for themselves, if you're, you know, there was not a person in the audience that wasn't there that I did not see with a smile on their face as they were leaving. And I think like that's a really big takeaway. So a hard yes for me, always. Six is one of my favorites, and it will go down as one of my favorites. So that's where that's at.
Yeah, I mean, and all of that. I was just telling someone when I went to go see it, and then that night, it's it's not too often that you go to a show and then you almost feel like you have to decompress for the rest of the evening because you're so amped, you're so hyped, you're so energized from the performance. And yeah, you feel there's a level of encouragement, a level of celebration, and empowerment that we love a good story, we love a good musical, but we also love like the realness of okay, now go and take this into your life and however it applies to you. And so the come down from that, I'm always like jittery for the next, like I still don't go to bed till midnight because
true,
you've got the songs in your head, your heart's pounding, and yeah, it's a good experience.
All that to say, whether you see it in Detroit or anywhere else on its tour, or if you visit New York or any other stationary show, make history and go see Six, the musical, because you will not be disappointed. And with that, thank you for listening to another episode of The Cosmic Curtain, the official podcast of Cosmic Circus Broadway. If you're interested in finding us outside of our box seats, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to us at Boxy Babes or at My Cosmic Circus for all Broadway updates. So until then, take care.